And welcome to this podcast from the Business Marketing Club, or BMC. I'm Dave Stevens. I'm a B2B marketer and I'm chair and co-founder of the Business Marketing Club. The BMC is a not-for-profit community network of B2B marketing professionals and people interested in B2B marketing. It's run by B2B marketers for B2B marketers, and we provide face-to-face and virtual event meetups, training, podcasts, blogs, newsletters, mentoring, social media groups, community groups, and gatherings for B2B marketers. Today, we've got over 1,000 participants across the world, but if this is the first time you've joined us, you're really very welcome. Check us out at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. If you've been with us before, well, welcome back. It's so good to have you along again. In this episode, I'll be speaking to Perrin Farb, the founder of Inspired Human, about diversity and business marketing. Plus, author of The Age of Influence, Neil Schaefer, on his business marketing journey, and CEO of Momentum ABM, Alicia Linden, celebrates some great B2B marketing. The future of the UK is diverse. 57% of first degrees are obtained by women, 25% of primary and secondary school children are BAME, 50% of all adults will be over 50 by 2030. But business isn't diverse today, and business marketing has a role to play in fixing that. I'm joined by Perrin Farb, who is the founder of Inspired Human. Perrin, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Dave. Thanks for having me.
It's good to see you. So first of all, tell us about Inspired Human.
Sure. I founded Inspired Human after working in B2B marketing for software vendors and tech companies for a decade and feeling like I never really belonged or I could never be my authentic self or feel valued. And so I wanted to change the tech workforce, workplace, and make it more inclusive and diverse. So Inspired Human is a London-based diversity and inclusion agency helping tech companies and startups create inclusive and diverse workplaces where employees are fully engaged and productive.
Okay, so that means I'm guessing by the fact that you were motivated to found Inspired Human that you kind of broadly agree with the summary of diverse society but not really diverse business that I kind of started out here. So perhaps you can give us some examples of where UK business is not diverse today.
Yeah, so for example, the marketing industry in the UK has come under the spotlight for failing to attract diverse talent. So the 2020 Marketing Week Career and Salary Survey reported that 88% of the UK marketing population is white compared to 86% of the UK population. So there is an overrepresentation of white individuals in marketing, the marketing profession in the UK. And we also know that in London, the white population is 56%. So clearly there is again, an overrepresentation of white individuals in the UK marketing workforce, and an underrepresentation of, you know, black and Asian minorities. And also in the tech industry. So, according to Women in Tech website, only 17% of those working in the UK tech sector are female. And according to a McKinsey report dated 2018, 11% of women only are in senior leadership roles in tech companies. Just one last stat showing the lack of diversity in tech. The Mercer report on UK high tech sector reported that men in high-tech companies earn 25% more than women. So there is a lack of diversity in, you know, in the marketing profession and in tech, for example.
And we should explain that, you know, it's not just a nice thing for marketing to be representative of the society that it operates in. There is a business case for diversity as well.
Yeah, absolutely. There is a lot of, there is an increasing body of research demonstrating the business case. So research has shown that companies in the top quartile for gender diversity outperform their competitors by 15%. and those in the top quartile for ethnic diversity outperform their competitors by 35%. That's according to McKinsey's 2015 report. Companies also that report above average diversity on their management teams report innovation revenue that is 19% higher than those with below average leadership diversity, according to a Boston Consulting Group 2018 study. And also Gartner found that workers in highly diverse and inclusive organizations result in 26% increase in team collaboration and 18% in increase in team commitment. And just one last piece of research that's very recent from May 2020 by McKinsey, stating that our research and the research of others suggests that when companies invest in diversity and inclusion, they are in a better position to create more adaptive, effective teams and more likely to recognize diversity as a competitive advantage, which is especially relevant, you know, in COVID, in the downturn, etc.
So this is something that we really should be motivated to do something about. So what can business marketers do to help?
There are lots of different ways that business marketers can help. And I've tried to summarize the top, you know, if more efficient ones. So one is to acknowledge and recognize bias. So bias is a particular tendency, a trend, an inclination that one is, you know, that is preconceived or unreasoned. So everybody has unconscious bias, including myself. So the best way to acknowledge bias is to hold an unconscious bias training. You might get some defensive response from the rest of your team, but I think it's important to articulate why you're doing this. I think B2B marketers can create an unconscious bias task force, for example, in the organization. They could make the unconscious bias training repeatable, and they could also ask to embed this as part of a larger approach to tackle unconscious bias. They can also do things like creating sponsorship programs by working with their HR department. So, you know, a sponsor is someone who is, you know, very vocal to help minority individuals get the raise, the promotion, or the chance to work on a high profile project. So, you know, business marketers can ask their HR teams to make those sponsorship programs, you know, voluntary, where you match a senior executive with an individual contributor from a minority population, for example. They can ask executives to sponsor someone who is different. So for example, a senior white male matched with a younger black female, for example, so they can both learn from each other. And also reminding executives that it's not about seeking praise or reward, but it's rather to be seen, it's not to be seen as helping, but to generally help. Another thing that, you know, business marketers can do to boost diversity and inclusion in their workplace is to hold leaders accountable. So by setting goals and measuring success on diversity and inclusion, you know, we know that goals drive behavior. So setting goals is really important. Trying to find, you know, their top executives' personal connection to diversity and inclusion is a great way to get genuine commitment from your leadership team, and choosing accountability partners for your organization. So sometimes partnering with an external organization can make you keep you accountable, you know, for the goals that you set for yourself. And finally, practicing inclusive leadership. So business marketers are probably leading teams. And so by being inclusive leaders, being aware of their own biases and preferences and seeking, you know, considering different views, that's going to boost a more diverse workplace. So they can do things like starting conversations about diversity, you know, practicing curiosity and noticing differences in their team, and really leading with empathy and cultural intelligence.
What I like about that actually is that you've not just explained what marketers can do to help, but you've also explained the how there. There's some very practical advice, so thank you. Maybe we should end on a more positive note. So can you give us an example of where a business has done diversity well in its marketing function?
Sure. So there is a London-based fintech startup that's called Ocam. And so they are a lender using innovative technology to empower the underbanked to access affordable credit. So one of the things they've done, so they've hired an American mixed race woman to lead their marketing function, which, you know, is a strong action in supporting diversity, as we know that we talked about the UK marketing workforce and tech being very white. So, you know, having a mixed race woman leading the marketing team is a strong action. They're also using images showcasing diverse consumers on their social media campaigns. So, for example, on their Twitter campaign, they've got, you know, black women, black men. So it's a very diverse representation in their marketing. And also there are, you know, for example, they're going to talk, you know, in a webinar about how to lead a startup in COVID by building a people first culture, where their chief marketing officer will talk. So again, having a, you know, mixed race, you know, chief marketing officer representing a startup in a webinar is a strong statement. So I think this is a great example of a, you know, a company that's doing diversity really well.
Definitely. Perrin Farke, founder of Inspired Human, thank you very much for talking.
Thank you.
Next up, Neil Schaefer shares a key lesson that he's taken on the journey to being author of The Age of Influence. Neil, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
So before we get started, tell us a little bit about The Age of Influence.
Sure. Well, The Age of Influence is my fourth book that I've written on digital social media marketing. It's really a book that I believe helps educate marketers on a topic that is sorely misunderstood, which is the topic of influencer marketing, really redefining this concept of digital influence so that it can be applied not just to the Kim Kardashian million follower types on Instagram, but really that any business in any industry can tap into the people that already know, like, and trust them that are already building influence online. So I've been told it's a groundbreaking book for that reason. It's something that a lot of people aren't talking about. But when I look at the different things that marketers can do to really push the needle forward from a digital perspective, I believe that influencer marketing today has the biggest potential and can have the biggest impact.
And you're not just an author, I think I'm right in saying, but your skill set covers lecturing in multiple international locations, and you've been a kind of stalwart in marketing for a while. Is that fair?
I've written four books. I teach at a few universities teaching executive education. I do a lot of speaking. I've spoken. There used to be, all of you in the UK remember iStrategy was a brilliant conference. And I spoke there when it was in Stamford Bridge, the Chelsea Football Club stadium.
Right,
yeah. So it's really been an amazing journey. It's been a fun journey. And I, at the heart of what I do, I consider myself an educator. And I love to share what I've learned and hopefully provide value to people.
So I'm intrigued on about your career journey then, and what's gotten you to this place. What sort of skills and qualities have you had to pick up on the way to being the lecturer, marketer, educator that you are today?
Well, I think the most important thing, and I talk about this in my book as well, because if you think about what an influencer is, they're a content creator and they're showing up regularly on their preferred social media channel or you know, digital content channel. Mm. So I began really organically without any intent of becoming who I am today by starting a blog. And I launched my blog back in 2008. It was actually on WordPress.com. And it was all about LinkedIn. When I started, the only social media for professionals was LinkedIn. And I thought that it was, once again, very much misunderstood as a business tool. And I began to blog about that. Right. And that blog ended up turning into a book, my first book, which I published in 2009, which led to people, companies reaching out, asking me to speak on LinkedIn and me generating book sales. And then in January of 2010, because of all of the speaking I had done locally and the book starting to get into people's hands, I had companies reaching out to me saying, you know, we'd like to hire you. Now, my background before that was actually B2B sales, biz dev with some marketing, but it was actually more on the sales side. So right. I didn't have an agency background, but I did realize that businesses need then what I still think they need now. They need strategy and they need education. So I created, because there was no format or framework, I created what I called a social media strategy or social media marketing strategy consulting company. I solely focused on helping companies develop social media marketing strategies. And this is obviously very, very early on, 10 years ago. And that just led to, I think it's the combination of regularly publishing content through my blog and also showing up on social media. You know, started with LinkedIn, but I became a really big fan of Twitter, somewhat of a fan of Facebook. Started using Instagram early in the day. A combination of that and, you know, I think I was early on. I think today it's a lot harder because there's just a lot more bloggers, a lot more authors. Back then, there weren't as many, which definitely helped. But I think it's also the combination of showing up online and also showing up physically, of actually speaking at events. When I got invited, I would take the opportunity, get to know people. And it's the combination. Unfortunately, in COVID-19 today, we can't do that offline. But really, the offline networking is as if not even more important than the online networking, and really taking those online relationships to the next level offline. But, you know, I have never, you know, in all honesty, I've never prospected for business. Everything that I do has come to me inbound just through that presence I have in digital media. And that is something that, you know, today we don't have to do a blog. We can do a podcast. We can do a YouTube channel, but there's still plenty of opportunities. If you have the mindset that you want to serve people, you want to help people. I always say I'm serving my community, right? When I write a book, it's serving the community of my readers. So if you have that mindset, there are plenty of ways you can be helping others with your experience through one of these digital mediums, right? It's you know, blog, podcast, YouTube channel, take your pick and run with it.
It's a great story. So I'm really intrigued. If you go back to sort of 2007 and 2008, did you have a master plan that you were going to exploit to go down this particular career path, or has it been something that you've kind of had to develop in an agile way as you've gone?
It's been the latter, because my background, there's a whole past of me that I don't talk a lot about in social media, but I am actually fluent in Japanese and Mandarin Chinese. So the first 15 years of my career, I lived in Japan. And it was really getting married, having a baby girl, and wanting to raise her back in the United States that changed things. Now, my company allowed me to still be, you know, vice president of Asia sales from California. But as, you know, baby number two came along, my wife needed more help. I sort of pulled out of working with that company, took some time off to help our family. And then when I got back into the labor force, which is in 2008, this is where I became a more active user of LinkedIn from a networking perspective for the job search. But I realized, I mean, slowly I began to realize I had to reinvent myself, that companies were not going to, hire Americans living in America to help manage their Asia sales when they can hire people locally, right? So you know, I had to reinvent myself, and I really wasn't trying to. I was still looking for a job on LinkedIn while I was networking, while I was launching my blog. I found my job, and I that was the day I got the offer is actually when I launched my blog, because I wanted to make sure I kept networking even while I was working through my blog. And what happened was that company decided 3.5 months later, we had the Lehman Brothers crash. They decided they were just going to pull out of international operations. So my position was gone. And I'm a very, hopefully you can tell from my voice, I'm a very passionate individual. And that to me, it was the worst feeling that a company like that can take all that away from me. So that's when I said, I need to build something that's mine that nobody can take away from me. And that's a personal brand. So that's where I became more passionate about it. And it was my wife who said, you know, if you don't find, it's 2009 now, very difficult year to find a job. My wife was the one who said, you know, you should consider writing a book if you don't find a job. And I said, nah, I don't want to become an author. And here we are. And it was, what's really funny is that in that January 2010, I launched my company. I was working on my first contract negotiation, and I actually had a job offer from, you know, a company to do, director of business development, Asia Pacific for a technology company in Silicon Valley. I had a second interview. And, you know, the people I interviewed, they were 20-somethings that, you know, that started this tech company. And they said, Neil, we know you're really active in social media, but you're going to have to unplug from social media if you want to do this job well. And that, and this is the proverbial fork in the road, right? This is a company saying, stop social media, go back to corporate, or continue on this path of, and I believe it was a path with tremendous upside vis-a-vis social media. So that's the path I took. So once you hear that story, I think it all makes sense. And even though my background was sales, I was a country manager. I managed everything in Asia. I had to do marketing. I had to hire people. I had to look for office space. So, and I had to do it over multiple cultures, multiple countries, multiple languages, multiple ways of doing business. So that equipped me with an extremely holistic business experience that I could apply the market. Even though I wasn't a seasoned marketer, I could apply those that knowledge to what I saw. And my sales background meant that I was very focused on the data, right? No fluff with me, because there was never any fluff in sales, having to report back on my pipeline every day to my manager, what have you. So that gave me, I think, a really unique insight. And obviously the money at the beginning in social media was really with PR. It was reputation management, slowly moved over to marketing. You know, sales teams have some budget. I do social selling trainings and whatnot for LinkedIn, but really, you know, it is a marketing medium, and marketing does control the budget. So it was only natural over time that I would shift in that direction. And I think what's also helped me, because I don't have that traditional marketing experience, is just, you know, working together with companies as a consultant. If I was just a speaker, what am I going to speak about? You need to have the experience. And it was really the experience of working with those clients, learning myself, but also, you know, in some ways, a bunch of experiments, right, of working with different companies and seeing the data and seeing what worked and didn't work, that also helped me become and continues to, as I work with companies and see what works and what doesn't work, and equipped with that data, I move forward, and hopefully I provide, you know, bigger insight, better insight. I'm already conceptualizing my next book, right? It's a combination of really keeping my foot in the ground and really working with companies, while also trying to educate others and understand what their pain points are, what their questions are. And with every podcast interview, I get better and better at my game.
Wow. Well, it sounds like a pretty good game to me. Neil Schaefer, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
There's some great business marketing out there, and I'm joined now by Alicia Linden, the CEO of Momentum, to celebrate it. Alicia, welcome to the podcast.
Good to be here, Dave.
So before we get to celebrating business marketing, can you tell us a bit about Momentum?
Yes, we are a B2B growth consultancy and pioneers of account-based marketing. We help our clients grow not only their key and strategic accounts, but also help them grow revenues and success that they see in new markets and with new propositions that they're launching.
So that means, Alicia, you'll have seen some great business marketing. So what's caught your eye?
A campaign that I've recently seen from Amazon Web Services, it's called Is How. And what I love about it is it's putting the customer front and center, and it's all about how their customers are innovating, underpinned by AWS.
So how did they put the customer front and center?
What they've done is they've taken stories of how organizations like Philips are creating the digital toothbrush, or how firms like GE are driving their innovation. So they've started with the customer, not their brand. And what the whole story and the content and the advertising that I've seen around it is really about less about AWS, less about the cloud, and much more about what they've enabled. And it touches something for me that it's really celebrating the success in quite an empathetic way. It's not focused on speeds and feeds, you know, AWS are 2% quicker or 5% cheaper, but really brings to life how they've helped their customers.
And so I'm sorry to interrupt you. Is it the empathy that is the thing that really impresses you?
For me, it's the way they put the customer at the center, and it's also how they're getting across how they want their customers to feel. So I think there's a lot that we hear in B2B marketing today about storytelling and empathy. I think that for me is a given. Those are foundational kind of building blocks that you have to have. but it's actually connecting it back to the business value that's been a real game changer in this particular campaign. They've taken how they want individuals to feel, but they're still connecting it back to business impact. So like the Philips toothbrush example, you can feel the innovation, the excitement, the development that they're getting as an organization. And individually, that makes you feel excited, but you're also connecting it back to the business value.
Okay. And so what have you learned from the Amazon approach that you apply to your work?
So I think whilst, you know, well, I mentioned earlier, storytelling, empathy, those are table stakes where we have to do that in all of our work to have any form of impact. But if you can take the storytelling and empathy and also connect it with how you want individuals to feel, how you want when they're engaging with any content, when they're interacting with any campaign, actually leaving them with a particular feeling that they can then connect the dots and see the impact and want to be part of something.
Cool. Can you give us an example of where you've put that into practice?
There are lots of examples that where we're taking, for example, with one of our clients recently in Switzerland, we had a particular account and we knew an individual wanted to move into more of a digital role. So we painted a picture, we told a story of how their organization could digitally transform. And then for this individual, we as part of the narrative, we were able to make them feel quite excited, passionate about a particular direction, so they were motivated into action to take this video up to their chief digital officer with a view of potentially some internal promotions, and that in turn went up to the rest of the board at this particular account and has landed one of our clients' largest deals potentially
over
the year. So
it really works.
It does have an impact. I think if we're all human and we all want to, you know, we're here to be connected to something, and we all have our own ambitions to achieve as well. So definitely those three legs of the stool, having the empathy, having the storytelling, but also creating a feeling.
Some great advice there. Alicia Linden, CEO of Momentum. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Dave.
And that's it. That's all for this episode of the Business Marketing Club podcast. Thanks to my guests, Perrin Fark, Neil Schaefer and Alicia Linden. And thanks to our technical team from Through the Eye of Scott Jackson, Andrew Gratian, Alex Horn and Josh Bench. Most of all, though, thanks to you for listening. Do rate or review us if you can and email me at davestevensnow@gmail.com if you'd like to be a speaker or offer feedback. There's more where this came from. The Business Marketing Club is a not-for-profit community run by B2B marketers for B2B marketers. And you can check out our other webinars, podcasts, events, mentoring, blogs, newsletters, social media groups, community groups, and gatherings for business marketing professionals and people interested in business marketing. Just go to businessmarketingclub.org.uk. I hope to see you again. Thanks for listening.